I guess we're going to move right into the director's report. Or do people want a break? Can keep going? Okay. Let's go into the director's report. I'm not seeing a lot of need for a break right now. So go ahead, Director Anderson.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I think I'm going to be able to help you catch up and get back on schedule.
Okay.
I have a just a kind of a variety of things I wanted to report on this morning. The first thing is we've had two retirements from key senior management staff in the department here just recently, and one imminent. The first was Joe Wadsworth, the deputy assistant director for the FISH program, retired. Her last day on the job was yesterday, so had a chance to have a get-together with her and bid her thanks for all the things that she did here for the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the FISH program, and give her a send-off into her retirement. The second is Peter Birch, who's the Deputy Assistant Director for the Habitat Program, has announced his retirement, and that's coming here in the next month. So two key senior staff members of the department retiring, and we'll be working to for recruitment and filling those positions here in the weeks to come. The second thing is that we have a new addition to our senior management team, and that particular position, which leads the community relations and public affairs division within the director's office, is a direct report to Joe Storr, and I'd like to have Joe introduce him to you.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm very excited to do this. You know that as we have talked over the last 6 months about directions the agency needs to go and changes in emphasis, we've talked a lot about outreach and the need to build external community relations. We heard that from the public. As we thought ourselves around strategic planning, that kept rising to the top. So what we've done is we took an existing management position and redirected it. Took and put a strong emphasis on community outreach, community relationships, while maintaining our existing media response work, public affairs work. We had a very competitive hiring process. We had 62 applications for this position and went through an interview process, and we ultimately selected Bruce Botka. Bruce is here in the audience with us. So Bruce, he hasn't started yet. He starts on the 16th, but he's so excited about being here that he came today, and he'll be with our Big Tent Committee tonight. Bruce currently is working at the auditor's office, and you might ask, what's the auditor's office have to do with community relations? But you may remember the performance audit statutes that passed several years ago, where there was a strong emphasis on looking at effectiveness of government and various government agencies, and that went to the auditor's office. So Bruce leads the charge there in terms of working with agencies, but also with the impacted communities around various state agency efforts and implementation of regulations. And so we're very excited to have him here. Bruce, I don't know if you want to say a couple of words. I'll put him on the spot here. You can test him out.
Well, thank you very much, Joe and Phil. I am really excited about the opportunity to work with you and the staff and the many constituents of the Department of Fish and Wildlife and your partners around the state on the commission. When we talked in the interview process, I said it seemed to me that you're a little bit unusual compared with a number of the commissions I've worked with before, in that everyone wants you to be successful. That wasn't always the case with a couple of places where I've worked. The only challenge is that people define success so differently that it's often pretty challenging to meet everyone's standard. But I won't delay your meeting any further, but I do want to say how happy I am to have this opportunity and really grateful to have survived that hiring process, which was conducted very well. I have to tell you, it was the best one I've been involved in my career.
Thanks, Bruce. Is that in part because of the outcome? Or?
I should tell you, I did say that before they made the decision, although I hoped it might have a little bit of impact.
Yeah. Commissioner DeVito.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Would you mind sharing with us a little bit about your family and some of your interests?
I'd be happy to. I've got two grown kids, one in college, one living in Chicago, working, having graduated from college. I've lived in Washington most of my life, in the Olympia area now for about 25 years. When I'm not at work, I basically try to spend as much of my time outdoors as I possibly can. Fishing, boating, hiking, camping, gardening, bird watching. One of the most exciting things about the position to me is that it will be a great alignment between my personal interests and values and my professional skills. So that's really what excited me about the opportunity. I've lived in eastern and western Washington, lived in Idaho, spent time on the harbor in Aberdeen, over in Colville and Chewila, and in fact, I think I've met some of your family in the past over in that neck of the woods. So I'm pretty familiar with the whole state.
Good. Nice to have you.
Thank you very much.
Definitely. Welcome aboard.
Thanks.
So I'm just going to run through a couple of different items here and in no particular order of priority. The first one is just a bit of news that you may be aware of, that the Oregon Commission has three new members that were appointed and confirmed here just last week, and their terms start on actually today. Their names are Greg Woolley, Laura Anderson, no relation, and Christina Wolniakowski are the three new commissioners. I also believe that two of the other commissioners on the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission were just appointed last year, so they have a number of new commissioners, so just to make you aware of that. Next week will be the annual Centennial Accord meeting. It's held annually. The Centennial Accord was created by Governor Booth Gardner on August 4th of 1989. The accord's purpose is to illustrate the commitment by the parties, those being the state and the tribes, to implement a government-to-government relationship. It is also intended to institutionalize this relationship within the organizations represented by the parties. So it's an event that I've attended for a number of years. I think this one is going to be largely celebrating Governor Gregoire's tenure here over the last 8 years as governor. We're going to have myself and one other individual attending the meeting. Razor clams. I've had some interest from, in particular, Representative Dean Tacko, as well as Senator Hatfield, Representative Brian Blake, brought on at least to some extent by a constituent in the Iwako Chinook area, Steve Gray. Some of you are familiar with Steve, and who's an avid razor clam digger and has had a belief for a long time that we have too low of exploitation rate and that we should be harvesting more clams and providing more opportunity than what we're doing. You may recall that we currently have a 30% harvester exploitation rate on harvestable clams. So we had this meeting down in Montesano just was within the last 2 weeks. And during the meeting, we had the opportunity to discuss the new abundance-based harvest rate approach that is currently under internal review. This new approach would provide higher exploitation rates when abundances are high, and conversely lower exploitation rates when abundances are low, thereby affording greater protection of the resource at lower levels. We have already shared and are seeking feedback from both the tribes, particularly the Quinault Indian Nation, as well as the Olympic National Park on this new harvest policy. We are hopeful that we'll be in a position to implement the new harvest policy this fall with the next razor clam season. And obviously Dan Ayers and some of our biometricians in the fish program here in Olympia have been the reason and are responsible for the creation of that new harvest approach. Shifting gears again to our wild system vendor, wanted to let you know that we've recently awarded a contract to the Kinsel Corporation that's based in Arlington, Virginia, as our new vendor. This came as a result of the department's evaluation team's selection process, which our team consisted of 11 staff from wildlife program, enforcement program, fish program, licensing, our internal auditor, our IT folks, and two technology contractors. So as a result of a very comprehensive selection process, this was the corporation that was selected. They are experienced in hunting and fishing and permitting systems, providing solutions to both U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for their permits, their lotteries, their fee collection, and other processes. They also manage the permitting process for the United States Department of Agriculture, Forest Service, state parks for the state of California, and they are currently managing, of all things, the United States IRS application and renewal services for continuing education providers that serve registered tax return preparers. Their demonstrated knowledge of similar processes coupled with their advanced technology solution gave them the highest ranking from our RFP selection team. They will begin the wild replacement project on July 2nd of this year with an estimated completion date of February of 2014. And let me just take a moment to just give you, and I will provide you a handout that has a little bit more detail, but some of the things that and the reasons that this corporation was selected. They've got, from a technology perspective, they're very modern. We're going to be able to utilize, for example, Apple iPads for dealer point of sale, mobile applications, smartphone technology, preparing for the future and how customers buy and interact with us, and a tool for enforcement. In terms of what the license and passes will look like, we have the ability to reduce the size of today's license. And we're also going to have some paperless print-at-home options that we currently don't have. From a customer relationship and management perspective, they've proven their effective communication tools, such as online chat systems. They have tech support, improved transparency of dealer technology support, and service to licensed dealers, partners. From a business intelligence perspective, we're going to be able to improve our analysis of the data, slice, dice, drill down, greater efficiency, no longer waiting weeks for complex reporting. From an accounting and inventory perspective and accuracy, we're going to be down to transaction detail level on a transaction by transaction perspective. From a catalog management perspective, WDFW will control the website updates. Changes are now going to be able to be completed in hours rather than days and sometimes weeks. Harvest reporting is another important additional tool. We're going to be able to have real-time access to our system data. And from a marketing perspective, we're going to have the ability to do surveys and design, manage, and evaluate different campaigns and utilize various tools from email to direct mail and social media. So a pretty wide variety of increased capabilities of the system that we're going to have with this new system. So we're very excited about having that come online here in February of 2014.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, a two-part question. As I understood it, if an individual sits down at his computer or laptop or iPhone and computer or where he has printing capability, he would then fill out the application, submit his credit card, and get a paper license that's valid immediately?
Rather than me try to get into answering those detailed questions, because the system's still in the process of being worked out, but we are, I mean, I think the bottom line is you're going to be able to do more from your home computer and obtaining licenses than what you can do today. But beyond getting into any specifics about exactly what additional capacity and capabilities are going to be able afforded to our customers, I really don't want to try to answer that question.
If I may, a second part of the question, and I'm sure your staff's already thought about it, so let's assume we get to that point where it's an instant license that's applicable that day. Would the department then mail out the appropriate pamphlet, be it a sport fish or hunting pamphlet, immediately after that sale? Or how do you think that should be handled?
Well, I would not. I mean, that really isn't part of the contract. However, I mean, right now, certain types of licenses you can go online and buy right now, and they're good the minute they come off your printer. I do it with small game license as an example, or a shellfish license is an example of that. There are other licenses that we mail, you buy them online, then you're able to, and then we mail those to you. I think there's going to be examples of those kinds of licenses where we're currently mailing those, that you'll be able to print those and have them ready to go instantaneously from the time you purchase them. As far as mailing our thick pamphlets to folks, I would not be an advocate of that, frankly. All of our pamphlets are online. If someone requests one, but we would need to think about what kind of mailing costs are associated with that and whether or not that makes sense. But right now we have our pamphlets online. Go to our website and you can access any one of our three fishing, big game, or small game hunting pamphlets right now.
The only hole that I see in that is that if a person goes online and buys a license, I'm concerned a little bit about the compliance factor and not knowing what all the rules are, because particularly in the fishing side, most fishermen take the pamphlet on board with them because it's fairly complex, and I don't have an answer. I just throw it out as more of a question.
Okay.
Commissioner Perry.
I just wondered, is there a difference in cost? I assume there probably is with all the things you outlined. But is there a difference in cost between what we do now and what will be offered under the new system?
There are no new costs. Essentially, the same proportion of the transaction fee that currently goes to our vendor currently, the same percentage is going to offset the cost to the vendor, our new vendor.
Actually, I meant the cost to the department to have this system in place.
Well, that's where we recapture the cost, is through the transaction fees. And so there's a proportion of the transaction fee that goes to the vendor. There's a proportion of the transaction fee that comes to the department. The proportion of the transaction fee that's going to the vendor and comes to the department, I believe, is staying the same.
Yeah, that really still doesn't get to my question.
I don't know how to deal with that.
What will it cost the department to have this system relative to the system we have right now?
Is there a monthly fee for this vendor?
It's it's based on, it's, I don't have that number in front of me. I can get it to you, Commissioner Perry, but it's based on the number of licenses they sell. The more licenses we sell, the greater the transaction fee, and then the greater proportion, their percentage of the transaction fee will go up as license fees increase. But
I see.
Without getting into too much detail here that I'm not prepared to answer, I was going to have our licensing division manager, Bill Joplin, come and give you a more comprehensive overview of this. I just wanted you to be aware that we had awarded this contract and what some of the new features that we're going to be able to accomplish are. But
no, that answers the question fairly well.
Okay.
Yeah, I think if I understand the question, we're not paying the company to do this so much as they'll be paid by the transactions that occur, so there's no dollars flowing from the department, you know, independent of the transactions.
That's correct. Every transaction has a transaction fee associated with it. The same proportion of that transaction fee that we're currently paying to the vendor, that stays the same. So there's no increased cost to the department, maybe is another way to say that.
Commissioner Duda.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think you mentioned this, Director, but I think I didn't quite hear it. When the new system will be, with the new updates, will be available after the first of the year or after 2013?
2014, I think.
February 2014.
Okay.
Okay. So another issue that we've been dealing with, is you're aware of, is the Puyallup Hatchery. And we did take that off the agenda because we're not bringing anything forward on that topic. I did just want to report to you a couple of items on that, though. We're, as a number of other examples that we are seeking partnerships, private-public partnerships, consistent with the directive that was in our 2011-13 budget, which directed the department to seek additional opportunities for partnerships in order to keep fish hatcheries operational. As you know, we've formed partnerships. We have four of them now, actually, I think we have five, and as Commissioner Duvia reported in his comments, we're looking at another one. Our objectives for this or any other proposed lease agreement include increasing, in this case, trout production for the utilization by the public, reducing liability associated with an aging facility that's in need of capital investments in the infrastructure, and again, to promote public-private partnerships and maintaining strong community connections. However, in light of the strong negative reaction we received from the community, we elected to suspend consideration of a lease agreement with Pacific Seafoods to operate the Puyallup Trout Hatchery. That said, though, we're continuing to seek public-private partnerships, not only for this, for other facilities where they make sense, that achieve those objectives that enhance fish production, reduce cost to the state, increase opportunities for the public, the fishing public, and that are integrated with community values. So following making that decision 2 days ago, we communicated with a large number of the folks that have been interested in this issue, including legislators, city and county officials, the Puyallup tribe, and the concerned citizens that we had interacted with. So just wanted to let you know what we were trying to accomplish, what we think, again, is continues to be worthwhile objectives, and that we'll continue working not only here but in other places looking for those opportunities.
Commissioner Mankin?
Yeah, Mr. Director, what's in our future in these types of, I mean, what will you do now with the Puyallup Hatchery issue?
that would be different. Is this kind of a delaying action at this point until we kind of retrench and learn a little more about what the community needs are? Will we go out on a bid process for this, including the local communities and the tribes? Where do we go from here, I guess?
Well, I think that is the question, is where do we go from this? And what process do we use? I mean, this was, I'll readily admit, this was a learning experience. We've had other public-private partnerships that we've entered into that have gone smoothly, and we haven't and we haven't had the kind of negative reaction that we did here. I think, as Jim Scott and I have kind of done a debrief of what could we have done differently here. I think every hatchery presents a different circumstance, and we need to evaluate those circumstances before we begin, recognizing that some may have issues and complications that others don't have. And for example, the history in the Puyallup hatchery, the investments that have been made not only by the department but perhaps other entities into that facility, and what they might think about moving forward. Do we need to do a request for proposal kind of process, an RFP sort of process? Or is it appropriate to entertain and engage with a single private partner like we did with Trout Lodge, for example? We didn't go out with an RFP for that. We just, I think about a year ago, came back to the commission and asked for your approval to extend that lease to, I think, about a 70-year period. That's out in a very rural area, didn't have the same kind of connections and linkages in the community that the Puyallup hatchery had. So and there are other examples, the McKernan hatchery, which we leased to the Per Se and Vessel Owners Association, really without any of we didn't go out with an RFP. There was, we didn't have this kind of feedback from the community that we had there. So this was a unique circumstance, a set of circumstances, And so I think as we go through and evaluate where we have an interest from a private partner and entering into a partnership with us, we need to carefully evaluate the facility itself, the history of that facility, and decide how to move forward. And I don't think there's, you know, in the case of the example with Trout Lodge, that probably worked pretty well. That kind of an approach didn't work as well here, and so taking a step back and asking ourselves, how do we move forward here? Because, frankly, the terms of the lease that we were discussing were extremely advantageous to the department, to the public. It would have resulted in increased trout production. It had a lot of really positive aspects to it, but there were a lot of concerns from the community, from the legislative community, from local government about whether or not it would change the character of the hatchery, and whether the current close community connections it has and the close community benefits that it provides would continue under a commercial operation. So I don't have a nice, clear, concise answer to your question, Commissioner, but other than to say we need to take a step back here. We know that Senator Castema has indicated to us that he's looking at putting together a community-based proposal that they would like to bring forward for consideration on the Puyallup hatchery. So we're hitting the pause button, taking a step back here, recognizing that going forward with negotiations with a single entity first, and obviously the problem here was there was some confidentiality surrounding the negotiations that we didn't feel comfortable sharing. And at the same time, we had a lot of community and legislative interest of keeping them up to date on what we were doing. So it was kind of a catch-22 for us.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Sure. Just to follow up, I think the circumstances every time will be a little bit different and requires a different look, but in this case, needing to get the message out and facts out first is where we got behind. I understand the disclosure and other factors, but I'm always looking for an opportunity, and I think let me plant a seed In this case, I seem to recall that there was about $1.5 to $2 million of restoration needed for that facility to bring it up to par. You now have a bipartisan legislative interest group at all levels, senior legislators, appropriation committee members, resources committee members. It seems like this would be a very appropriate time to talk to them about, and this is in line with the community's interest, bringing that facility up to date. Would they support that? I think I know the answer.
Yep.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments and thinking out loud. I really liked our initial concept that you had. I think that was a financially strong, appropriate, timely resource criteria, right on our mission. Disappointed that we're not making that happen. I also see what's happened here. Little experience, and it's even more sensitive to in small towns as the Caudle Hatchery is. And so one of the things that helped me a lot was when I first went to it, I went to the mayor, the county commissioners, Senator Sort, Senator Morton, and Representative Short, and everybody, and I said, do you want to save the Caudle Hatchery? And then I asked him, I said, what are you going to do about it? What's your proposal? And knowing that it's really easy for people to come back and criticize my idea, I says, well, if you don't have one, will you support what I have? And so we kind of started from don't criticize what I'm going to do if you don't kind of thing, and it really worked out. And the real surprise was, and I saw a lot of the comments come in, that this educational youth element, when I found this skill center that was willing to manpower, bring an instructor, and they would maintain part of the maintenance of the hatchery and help production of the hatchery at their expense for the educational opportunity, it really was a significant glue. And I think that could be a possible bill. They were even that our private entity would be interested in having the cost benefit of having an educational component as part of the hatchery, because I think they would have, that would be probably more profitable portion of the hatchery than their part they're manning, because it works out. So maybe we can salvage that by getting those people to come to our party and say, well, maybe your idea wasn't as bad as we thought it was, and we integrate a few new twists to it and stuff. So, but I think you were in the right direction the first time. I hope we can circle the wagons and get back to it.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I found the proposal, Phil, that you made on Puyallup to be really positive and really enlightening. And at this time in the world, the economics being what they were, for government to figure out a way to cut expenses and increase revenue, that was a very refreshing approach. I don't know necessarily why we got so much blowback. I'm sure the community people of that region know, but I just thought it made a lot of sense. I hope we can find another way to do it at some point.
Director Anderson.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, the conversations that we had 2 days ago, once we made the decision to pull back, were very positive. Even the community members that Jim Scott followed up and talked to again, that were opposed to having the hatchery commercialized and the concerns about taking the community aspect out of the facility, the conversations with the legislators and the city and county folks were all very positive. They weren't closing. I don't think they were closing doors. But so we just need to step back and take another look at how we can perhaps do this in a little different way that provides the community with the certainty that they need. So we're, again, people were upset, and they marshaled their forces to oppose it. But at the same time, the follow-up conversations were pretty encouraging, frankly. Okay. So,
very good.
Let me say, if I can, just one thing. I'm a supporter of public-private cooperative ventures of this sort. And I think that in this case, the Puyallup Hatchery, the operation and continued operation of the Puyallup Hatchery transcends, to some extent, the needs of the community because it goes beyond the community here. It goes into its support of commercial and recreational fisheries during a period of time when we're trying to recover these fish under natural conditions and trying to recover their habitat. So I think it's very, very important during a period of time when our hatchery production is now reduced by approximately 30% over the last two decades to maintain productive hatcheries. And if this is not the most productive hatchery, the best use for it in producing trout instead of salmon, for example, this is not a good example of that. But I think this transcends the need of the community in some respects. I'm sure the community sees the need for this and understands why hatcheries are so important. But I just want to make for the public record a statement that I am supportive of these types of public-private cooperative relationships. They've worked well for us in the past. I think they can work well for us with the cooperation of the community in the future.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a process point. This has been a good conversation. I'm just looking at the time. It's about 5 minutes before we're supposed to have a scheduled break. We haven't gotten to budget yet. And I know we wanted to sort of keep track of the time. So I'm just
Watching the time as well. But we've been having a very good conversation about an important topic. So invite the director to continue.
Okay. There's some hope that we'll still be really close to being right on time. quickly, I've also been involved in U.S.-Canada negotiations relative to the Albacore Treaty in the last couple of weeks, actually 3 weeks. Governor Gregoire has gotten involved in discussions with Premier Clark from British Columbia. What's at issue here is there's what's called a fishery regime that's part of the treaty that allows U.S. vessels to operate within the Canadian exclusive economic zone, which is inside 200 miles, and conversely, Canadian vessels to operate in the U.S. zone. The fishery regime expired in March, and what that means is that there is no access for either country in either country in the other's waters. That's because of where the Albacore have been located, a big hit on Canadian vessels. And so where this is going to go from here, essentially there was an impasse at the negotiations last week. It has been raised at very high levels within the United States government, and I'm not sure where this is going to go, if any place. But next is Governor's Retreats next week. I suspect it's the last one, so we'll be participating in that. And it will, as any of you that know Governor Gregoire know, that she's still got her foot on the gas pedal and looking for us to close out strong. And so we'll be talking about what we see in terms of the next 6 months, as well as she's certainly heavily into the transition planning stage now. So we'll be doing that next week. On the wolf front, you know that we'll be having a more extensive conversation tomorrow. Just wanted to let you know that we do have all of our new staff are now hired and on board, which are four individuals. We've got a number of things going on relative to implementation of non-lethal methods with three different livestock operators. And we have, one of you said, sorry, we do have Commissioner Jennings, a range rider about ready to be deployed on one of our livestock operators that has had a significant amount of interaction with Wolves starting up. So we're excited about that. We also were able to capture and collar two animals from the Smackout pack. The first one that was captured was on Monday, and it was a 90-pound male and estimated age 4 to 6 years old. And it's believed to be the alpha male, but now we're not quite certain of that because we were able to capture a second one yesterday. And it weighed 97 pounds, and we still haven't got the assessment of the age, but it does not appear to be a yearling. Both of these animals have been fitted with GPS collars, download data 2 times per day based on locations that are gathered every 6 hours. They also have VHF radio capability and can be located using a receiver and traditional directional antennas. So some good news there to have two of those animals now collared.
Commissioner Duvia?
Director Anderson, was that second one happen to be gray, you know?
Black.
Both of them are black.
Yep.
Both male?
Both males. Yep. We may have a little bit more information for you tomorrow. We also had our Northeast Livestock Operators team meeting this week. There'll be an update on that provided to you tomorrow, as well as a detailed discussion on the Lookout pack depredation event that we had here recently. Very last thing is, was this handed out?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is a handout that was requested yesterday by Commissioner Carpenter that depicts a Chinook. What we call the FRAM, the Fishery Regulation Assessment Model for Chinook. And I'm going to give you a real quick try to familiarize you with this table. This is, as you can see up at the very top, it's under the bolded, it says run number 1512. Okay, so this is the run description is the 2012 final PFMC. You'll see that third entry down from the top. This is gives the total, what you'll see up the top says fishery, and then the list of fisheries, and it says fishery-related mortalities, so that includes both landed and non-landed mortalities, and then the fishery description. This is for the marine waters, so it's not, doesn't give you the numbers for the Columbia River, doesn't give you the numbers for freshwater areas, Willapa Bay, Grace Harbor, those kinds of fisheries. And so you can see under the fishery, for example, let's go down under North of Falcon Ocean, Treaty Ocean Troll, you'll see the 61,937. And then immediately to the right of that, the TAC, total allowable catch, is 55,000. So the landed catch is 55,000 Chinook. The total fishery-related mortalities associated with that are 61,937. Okay, so the difference between those two numbers is the non-landed mortality. Let's go down to the next entry, which is non-treaty ocean troll, 58,255. See that number? 58,255. Let's turn the page over. So what this FRAM model does is it looks at catches by time, by in these four times, what we call time steps. October through April 1, May, June, July through September, and October through April 2nd. So those are the four time steps. So let's remember, we're going to remember that 58,255 number from the ocean non-treaty troll. And we're going to drop down about a quarter of the way down this page under the fishery name until we get to NT3:4TRL. You with me? Mm-hmm. Non-treaty, Area 3-4. So Area 4 is Nia Bay, Area 3 is LaPush, okay? Troll. And you'll go over to the far right and see the number 21605. Okay? Now we're going to go down four spaces down to the next NT2 troll. Mm-hmm. With me? Okay? And that's non-treaty troll for Area 2, which is Westport. Ledbetter up to the Queech River. And then you'll go over to the far right and you'll see the number 24184. Okay? We're going to drop down. We're going to pass by the Grace Harbor, non-treaty Grace Harbor net, the Willapa net, and then we're going to get to NT1 troll. And we're going to go to the far right, and we're going to see the number 12466. Okay? So if I were to take the NT34 troll number, the 21605, the NT troll 2 number, 24184, and then NT1 troll, 12466, and I added those three numbers up, it would total, surprisingly enough, 58,255, which is the number you see over on the front side of non-treaty ocean troll. And then you can look at by the time step. So within that non-treaty 3:4 troll, how many of that 21605 is taken in the May-June time frame? You'll see it's 12012, the July-September time step, and so forth. And so you can look down and you can look up at the very top entry, SEAK, Southeast Alaska Troll. Time step October through April 1, 14,526, and on across, and you'll see the subtotal for the Southeast Alaska Troll. I'm almost certain it will be the biggest number on here, 245,727 on the far right there into that first entry. So pick the fishery of your choice. West coast of Vancouver Island is the WCVI. There's the Area 10 sport. There are all these different entries, and you can see by time step when those Chinook mortalities are occurring. So this is one of the tools that we use in our North of Falcon process when we're evaluating a set of regulations to see how many Chinook are going to be taken and in what fishery. And then this is further broken down by each one of these area by stock. And so if we want to look at the non-treaty troll in Area 3 and 4, and we want to look at that number of 21605, we can break that down by stock group, and we can see how many of those are Columbia River fish, how many of those are Fraser fish, how many of those are Puget Sound origin. That kind of additional information is also in our model. But one thing you cannot do right now is break it down by in any finer time increments than these four time steps that are represented. So that's a quick and dirty run through of what this table tells us and how it's used in our preseason management process.
Okay. Thank you. Good. Very clear. Deputy Director Storr, you're not giving it. Now, preparation for August, can you just give us the outlook for what we will be doing in August at our next meeting?
Yes, Madam Chair. We will be coming to the Commission either, well, both via emails as well as in meetings and phone calls between now and September with our draft budget on the operating side, our draft capital budget, our draft strategic plan for the next biennium. So expect all of those to roll out. You'll hear tomorrow from Yair Rietsma, our performance manager, more about the schedule for the strategic plan and you know, how and where we hope you'll engage with us as we look forward to the 13-15 biennium. So all of that will roll out and hopefully result in a September approval for those documents. So we've got a little more time than we have had at some points in the past. And I got my fingers crossed that the budget isn't going to be as onerous and difficult as it has been in the last 3 or 4 years. So,
Commissioner Jennings?
Speaking of onerous and difficult, we did get some mandated administrative reductions and management reductions. When do we have to have those take effect? Is that for next fiscal year, or is that now, or what's...
Well, Commissioner Jennings, we had two sets of decisions in December. Some of those reductions took place, and then ultimately in April, more. Ours totaled to about $1.7 million. Those occurred management level, centralized service level, and just generalized administrative cut amounted to that $1.7 million. We are working our way through that. I mean, those are reductions that have to be in place by the end of the biennium. And the FTEs, the position... The management positions, we lost six of those, are somewhat separated from the dollars because of the timing of the way those rolled out. The dollars ultimately had to be found in places beyond just eliminating six management positions. So we are working through those as we speak.
Thank you.
And I think we're in pretty good shape.
Okay. Thank you. We did catch up quite a bit, so we're now only about 10 minutes behind. So let's take a break. Come back at 10 to 11.
That's good.